Hello and welcome to Is This Anime? I am your quote-unquote anime expert, Jack Metcalf. And joining us once again is Domenico. Domenico, how are you?
I'm doing well. Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me again.
We totally didn't have to do a new recording because Domenico totally didn't forget to watch the seventh episode.
Yeah, my bad. It definitely, adding the seventh episode didn't really change much, though. I feel like I could have continued on with the podcast, but it was good for the additional information and whatnot. So,
yeah, and we are talking about Sandland. This adaptation, it comes in a rather tragic coincidence. It comes on the heels of creator Akira Toriyama's death. Toriyama at least did get to see the first six episodes in full because this anime, it started off as a film, but the film was only released in Japan. They have since split up that movie into six episodes with additional content. The anime film, it runs 106 minutes. So I guess they added about 20 minutes worth of new content into this TV version, effectively. And on top of that, which we'll get into later, the TV version of this anime is continuing the story because basically Sandland, it is a 2000, it is a manga from the year 2000. It ran from May 9th to August 8th, 2000. It's just one volume. And I wouldn't say it was it was kind of a surprising choice, the fact that they chose to animate this, you know, 24 years after it came out already. When the movie was announced, I was kind of like, really? It's like, you're doing this now? I just kind of assumed it would have happened either earlier or just never. But, you know, I'm happy to have this for sure.
I mean, I've never heard of it before, so.
Yeah, it's a interesting.
I'm also the anime expert. So.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think there's like, I mean, it's not like there's any like massive Sandland fans. The fact that it's even getting a video game that's coming out in a couple weeks, actually, in mid-April. So that kind of surprised me. But here we are. We went from having basically zero Sandland material aside from the one volume of the manga to now an entire anime series that's also a sequel to the manga as well as a video game. There we go. The Sandland fans must be happy. At least I hope they are.
How many Sandland fans are there, though, as well? I told my brother I was doing this podcast and I mentioned Sandland and he'd never heard of it before. And he's a Toriyama fan, obviously. He's currently watching or rewatching Dragon Ball right now, so.
Is he a Dr. Slump fan? Is he that? That's how you know someone's a real Toriyama fan.
Okay, fair enough. His anime fandom pretty much ends with Dragon Ball, which is the case for a lot of people. So
yeah, I can consider myself a true Toriyama fan. I kind of already did my Toriyama tribute before in an earlier episode, hot off the heels of his death. But yeah, I'm a big Toriyama fan. Not just in the sense that I love Dragon Ball. I haven't watched a ton of Dr. Slump. I've watched an episode or two. I'm aware of it. But I did read the original Sandland as it ran in Shonen Jump US when it first came out, because for whatever reason, that was one of the debut titles there. And as I've said before, Toriyama also is who got me into RPGs, because basically there was Pokemon,
really?
Which of course, yeah, so Pokemon was my first RPG, but I mean, Pokemon is an RPG, but it also isn't one. I think a lot of people play Pokemon without even being aware that it's a turn-based RPG. Even though the mechanics are there. But my first like non-Pokemon RPG was a double pack called Final Fantasy Chronicles. And it contained both Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy IV. And Chrono Trigger, which contained art by Toriyama. Domenico, I'll even give you a minute just to look up Chrono Trigger if you haven't. But Chrono Trigger had some fantastic Toriyama art. He did all the character designs for it. Yeah, I mean, that's just straight up Goku on the cover.
JJS looks very Dragon Ball-ish for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And so for me as a kid, I'm just like, cool, I want the video game with the guy who's Goku with a sword. And that was enough to get me to, you know, ask my dad to buy it for me. And it worked out because Chrono Trigger is fucking fantastic. I think it's one of the greatest RPGs ever made. I still maintain it's one of my top three favorite video games.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I've also played the Dragon Quest series, which Toriyama is also responsible for. So, I mean, Toriyama, you know, he basically co-created the JRPG genre because Dragon Quest was the first, just straight up. And his character designs obviously are highly responsible for the success of those games he was involved in. Because, you know, I think Sandland actually is a good tribute to Toriyama, because straight up, I think we can attest, the character designs in this series are fantastic. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree with that. I'm generally going to rip on the story of this as we get into it, but overall, yeah, I do like the design of it. The animation is nice.
Okay, so you're coming into... All right. I thought you were going to be more positive, but shit, man.
You know, rest in peace to Toriyama. Big fan, but I'm going to... You know, I'd only just learned about the series. I'm going to shit on a little bit, so...
Let's get into it. Straight up, so we are covering episodes 1 to 7. As of this recording, there is an 8th episode. It's going to be 13 total. And basically, the first 6 episodes cover just the single volume of the manga, and then episodes 7 to 13 are basically a sequel. And Toriyama was involved with the writing of this too. I was also kind of surprised too, because Domenico, you haven't seen the latest Dragon Ball Super movie, but I thought the animation in this series resembled it quite a bit, but I was kind of surprised to know, nope, completely separate animation studio. This was not done by Toei. Toei is generally the studio responsible for pretty much all of Toriyama's works. Instead, this was done by Sunrise, which is primarily known for Gundam. They also do a lot of stuff, but yeah, this is a Sunrise production.
I've never heard of Sunrise.
You've heard of Gundam at least, though, right?
I have heard of Gundam for sure, yeah.
I guess you haven't watched a lot of Gundam since maybe like Gundam Wing.
Probably since I was a little kid, yeah. I couldn't name a character in Gundam. I know what it looks like, but...
You know what the Gundam looks like. The Gundam is dope.
Yes.
Episode 1 of Sandland. We open on a desert. Two soldiers are driving a truck. The fat one is complaining about how boring the job is. And then their car is attacked by a group of demons. And in this world, a fat, lazy king controls all the water, and he's selling it for insane prices. And our hero Rao, Sheriff Rao as he's known, he notices a small bluebird. He's just trying to buy water. And then a child gives him a bunch of water. And the child says that a demon gave him the water. This is interesting because I read the manga. And in fact, Domenico, can you hear the printer going on in the background?
I cannot, no.
Okay, that's good. I've just interrupted this for no reason. Anyways, so we see this child give Sheriff Rao a bunch of water, and the child says a demon gave him the water. In the manga, we actually see this play out entirely. We see our hero Beelzebub take out the soldiers, and then we just see him give the water to the children. And then it actually just cuts to Rao going to the demon village and meeting with Beelzebub. Instead, they gave him a bit more. I don't know why that choice was made. But there you go. That's the difference between anime and manga.
Save some time, I guess. It's a unnecessary pew-pew that they'll have later, I suppose.
I suppose.
By pew-pew, I mean like action and fighting and whatnot.
Yeah, weirdly enough, the manga has a bit more fighting there, but there you go. Mm-hmm. Anyways, this demon Beelzebub, he was the one who is giving water to human and demon alike. Rao, he goes to the demon village and meets with Beelzebub. And Beelzebub is a gamer. He's playing a Game Boy Advance, which I thought was cute. Mm-hmm. No, you didn't recognize the device?
Was it? I mean, I saw it was a handheld device, but I didn't notice it was specifically like a Game Boy Advance.
I mean, it could have been something different. This debuted in 2000, so maybe the Game Boy Advance.
Is that kind of a checkout? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to look up Game Boy Advance. No, it came out in 2001. So no, it's not a specific reference to the Game Boy Advance, but I'm sure there were other similar handheld devices in Japan, kind of like that. Mm-hmm. Either way, Beelzebub's a gamer. That's his whole passion. So Rao, he meets with Beelzebub, and he says he wants to find this legendary spring. And he knows the spring exists because a small bluebird, which is a water finch, was near the village there he was at. And he says there must be a place where there is water to sustain this water finch. And Beelzebub is resistant to help Rao, but Rao bribes him with a PlayStation. And in fact, in the manga, they straight up call it a PlayStation.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just name drop. This here, they don't identify it as a PlayStation. But if you look at it, it's just a classic PS1.
I did notice that.
Did you notice what Beelzebub's father looks like? Do you notice the character design his father takes after?
Referring to Lucifer?
Lucifer, yes.
No.
Bro, he's just straight up Deborah. He's just Deborah from Dragon Ball Z.
Hang on. Let me Google this.
Just look up Deborah, and then you'll just recognize the guy who you saw, you know, 20 minutes, well, maybe a couple hours ago, maybe.
Oh, yeah, I know. He's pretty much, yeah, straight
He's just straight up. There's very little adaptation going on. Maybe the clothing is a bit different, but otherwise the head is
They didn't really, I mean, I feel like they didn't really show him though. Like, it was dark, that scene, sitting in a chair. Yeah, they did. They showed his face. Yeah, okay.
For me, it was enough. I was like, okay, this is Deborah.
It
was,
you noticed it right away? Yeah.
I noticed it right away.
Generic devil man to me.
Yeah, fair enough. Beelzebub, at least, is a unique design. I don't think I've really seen Beelzebub in any of Toriyama's works.
He's just a fusion of Goku and Majin Buu or something. Or like Gotenks, I suppose.
Yeah, he's kind of got some Gotenks with the hair. Although I thought it was hair, but they identified it as horns later in the show. So yeah, Lucifer permits Beelzebub on this quest, but Beelzebub will only be able to play video games an hour a day. We get a tryout montage. The tryout montage is unique to the anime, and I really enjoyed this montage, where basically their car can only fit three people. So they've got to pick one demon other than Beelzebub to go on them with an adventure. So we get these tryouts. One demon, what is it? He can shapeshift, but the only shapeshifting he can do is give himself a bald spot. One demon can fly, but only like half a foot above ground. Apparently it's because he's out of shape. One demon is just really good at solving Rubik's Cubes.
I thought that was pretty handy. I probably would have gone with him.
I would have gone with him, man. The centaur is dope. I mean, I don't know why they didn't pick the centaur. He's fucking strong, but I guess
he couldn't fit in the vehicle.
It would have been awesome if they picked the Rubik's Cube demon, and then, you know, at the very end, his ability is able to solve one specific problem.
The Rubik's Cube?
He's like, oh, fuck, we need him. Oh, my God.
The final fight part, like, yeah, oh, we can't get past this part unless you solve this Rubik's Cube or something. Like, yeah, that would have been dope.
Something similar to a Rubik's Cube, a puzzle that only someone with Rubik's Cube experience could have solved. I thought that would have been dope. But nope, because it turns out this is an entirely anime original gag, but I enjoyed it. Turns out the person who is coordinating the tryouts, an old man named Thief, he's the guy. So this whole trial was completely pointless. And Thief doesn't want to do it because he's old, but he's really good at stealing. There you go, Thief.
He's the same age as Beelzebub, though.
Yeah, that's the funny joke, too. He's only slightly older than him, but he just looks old. Yeah. So yeah, we learn a bit later that Beelzebub is 2,500 years old.
And he still is only allowed to play an hour of video games a day by his father.
I mean, I guess video games are somewhat new to this era, too. So, you know, but yeah, his father still treats his 2,500-year-old son as a child.
Well, what's demon maturity age then? Like, when are you an adult? Like 3,000 years or something?
Well, and I guess it's inconsistent because, again, Thief looks like an old man and acts like an old man, but is only slightly older than Beelzebub. So I guess it depends on the demon themselves as well. Anyways, you know, Toriyama likes his gag, so I think that's really the whole point of this. Anyways, as they're driving, they get attacked by a centipede dragon. I thought the centipede dragon was a phenomenal character design. Again, you know, Toriyama, just a fantastic artist. I think people don't give him enough credit. I know his like human characters have, you know, kind of a samey look to them. And I think that's where a lot of the Toriyama critiques come from. But when he's given a chance to do monster designs, they rule.
I like the centipede dragon.
Yeah, it's dope. Anyways, they managed to escape the dragon by jumping over a massive hole in the desert, and that's it for the centipede dragon. We never see him again. It's in the same episode we learn about Beelzebub's age, and we learn that Beelzebub's baddie credentials are that he went to bed without brushing his teeth and even didn't brush his teeth in the morning after. There you go.
I mean, I did that last night, too.
Yeah, that's disgusting. And you drank, too. That's fucking gross.
Well, that's... I forgot to, you know, you just get tired, fall asleep, and drinking.
I guess so, man.
That happens.
I know, man. For me, it's I don't like sleeping with the bacteria inside my mouth, you know what I mean? I have to brush my teeth. I'll even if I'm like really tired, I'll like wake up in the middle of the night and just do it and be like, fuck, I want to go, you know, full.
That's a good habit to be in. I guess I'm more demon-esque because I do forget to brush my teeth sometimes. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, I just feel like guilty for it.
You pay for it in the morning, though. You definitely feel gross in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, we learn that Rao, meanwhile, he's actually killed a few men, because Beelzebub has never actually killed anyone. He's a demon, but he's a much more kind-hearted demon than he would let on. You know, he'll try and say he's a real baddie, but no, he's a softie. But Rao, it turns out, actually has quite a big body count, and we'll learn how big that body count is a couple episodes later.
Yeah, Rao's out there committing war crimes.
Rao is a war criminal, yes.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, this is a redemption story at the very least. We'll get into it, but, you know, he's at least trying to atone for what he did. But yes, he has committed war crimes.
If you look at the whole series, though, I guess we'll get into it as we progress too, but, like, you could just make an argument that the good guys are actually the bad guys. Because they're just taking up arms against the state.
I mean, but the state, like, also sucks. I mean, the state's pretty bad.
I agree, and, like, I don't like the government either, like, for in Canada, for example, but the solution can't just be to commit domestic terrorism, which is what they do.
They are, I suppose they are committing domestic terrorism.
But yeah, you know, by definition, they're terrorists and war criminals.
There you go. We're going to get into it because, yeah, there's some other shit to talk about. Yeah, the episode ends with these bandits. They're called the Diamond Bandits. They're popping their car tires and then they attack them. Rao kicks their ass until a cheap shot takes him out. And the episode ends with Beelzebub saying it's his turn to fight. Domenico, having told you that these six episodes are just a movie split up into parts, I think you could definitely feel that by how the episodes kind of end. They don't really have proper endings.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's a good point. Though I wouldn't have noticed that until you pointed that out. But yeah, it definitely does seem to end at weird times.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose even random anime episodes can do that because, again, they're just trying to be chapters of a manga. But you can definitely feel it because I think they are intending that you're going to watch these six episodes in a row or maybe only take a break halfway through or something. Anyways, episode two, it's now Beelzebub's turn to fight. He kicks the asses of the Diamond Bandits. We get a fun moment of Thief dressing up as Santa Claus because he says with this disguise, he can talk his way out of any predicament, although we never actually see him do that. But again, funny gag of Thief dressed up as Santa.
He looked like, he's got the Santa beard going on too, so it makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I guess he doesn't look as much like a demon. I'm not sure how Christmas works in this desert world either. Should be noted, yeah, the premise of the series is that it takes place 50 years or so after an apocalypse basically rendered the world deserted. We'll learn a bit more about the rest of the world later on, but for now, in these six episodes, this is all we see. It's pretty much Mad Max. Anyways, we get to the point where they find a tank. Rao takes out the soldiers who are piloting the tank by bluffing, saying he has poison gas when really it's just hairspray. That's the thing about this series. The lead characters go out of their way not to kill any enemies either. I don't think we even see a character death aside from the ones that happened in the past.
There's no deaths in it. I found it frustrating.
You found that frustrating, eh?
A little bit, yeah.
There was definitely a couple of characters where I'm like, okay, at least can these guys have it, but nope.
For sure, yeah, I thought that was going to happen, but
nope. So they acquire the tank, and the tank is basically their main base of operations from here on.
I'd like to point out that you're saying acquire the tank, they're committing terrorism. They stole the tank from the government and committed terrorism.
I mean, this entire series, like you said, is about terrorism. I guess we'll get into episode 7. I guess episode 7 also is going to involve terrorism. We're just not quite there yet.
So to be fair, though, I don't think it was their original intention. It's just sort of how it unfolded.
Well, they needed a tank. They needed a vehicle. Their other one got wrecked by the Diamond Bandits. So mm-hmm. There we go. So they acquire this tank, and they see an airship that's owned by the King's Army. And Rao, he pretends to be a soldier, which gets them ahead, but then the airship general, the general whose name is General Arai, he realizes they've been duped. So they hide in a cave, and the tank is forced to drop his water so he can bomb the shit out of them. And to get a good shot at the airship, Beelzebub and Thief tip the tank at an angle. And bear in mind, this tank is 1,500 kilos, so even Beelzebub and Thief are really fucking strong, it turns out.
Yeah, but so is that... What was he calling it, an air vehicle, whatever? Because, like, how heavy was all that water they were carrying? That was a lot of water.
It was a lot of water. And I guess it was also preventing the airship from dropping bombs. So the designs, and I don't exactly know how these designs work, but they're fun designs, but maybe their usefulness is dubious. That's the other thing, too. Toriyama, he said he basically just wanted to do a story about a guy in a tank. And it just kind of escalated. And then he also complained that the tank was too complicated to draw, and he regretted how he initially drew it.
Yeah, it's the design kind of owed there, for sure. Could have gone with like a more standard looking tank or something.
I don't think the word over-design, I think it's a good looking tank, but it does have a lot of details, and you could just kind of see Toriyama being like, oh fuck, I gotta do this every single panel. Toriyama, a dude who infamously created the Super Saiyan power-up because he didn't want to color in Goku's black hair anymore. That's what he said. That's Toriyama for you. He's a practical guy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they overhear on the radio the commander, about a commander who knew Rao back in the day. This guy's name is General Zhu. And the commander is an old dude who wears a floating shaped armor, which in my opinion, it kind of resembled Frieza's floating chair almost.
A little bit, yeah. I hated the design of that dude, but it was kind of Frieza chair floaty-ish.
I mean, hated as in you found him gross, or hated as in you thought it was bad?
He was gross, and it was just weird in the way his arms were like not fully sticking out of the floaty chair. Like you just see his hands. I found really weird and annoying too.
This has been a banner year for fat dudes, because I guess you haven't seen Dune. Or did you see Dune 1 at all?
No.
Okay, you haven't seen Dune 1 or Dune Part 2, but that series also features a famously grotesque person. I guess General Zhu isn't fat per se, he just has a fat armor, but nevertheless, kind of gave me Baron Harkonnen vibes.
He's pretty grotesque looking, though.
He is grotesque, and...
Yeah,
I was gonna make a joke. I'm like, what does he say about disabled people? But yeah, just this disabled general in a suit that gives him life, and also just a terrible person committing war crimes on behalf of the state.
So he's like George Bush or something.
He's or maybe like Dick Cheney, I suppose. George Bush.
George Bush is the king. He's Dick Cheney. That makes sense.
Yeah, the king is just living his life. Yeah. So we've made it to episode 3. He's just enjoying his pool with some hotties. King is a very ineffectual person, and he controls all the water because, hey, I guess he won the war. That's how it is. And we get Rao's flashback.
They don't have elections in Sandland. He's just a monarch. He didn't look old either, though, which didn't really make sense because, like, how far does the war go back? It sounds like he's been in power for at least 30 years, and everyone else seems to age, but the king isn't.
I guess it's because he's just a youthful fat boy.
He's got no stress. He's just eating, chilling at the pool all day. That's how you stay young.
Yep, 100%. So Rao, he talks about his life as a soldier 30 years ago. This was back when the Peachy people were destroyed by the king's army. And Thief says that the incident is at the top of his list of all-time disasters. And Rao counters by saying that the incident stopped the Peachy people from destroying Sandland. And Rao claims that they were trying to develop a weapon of mass destruction. Again, this was written in 2000, but he's already saying weapon of mass destruction 3 full years before. I know, man. Timing works out.
Has anyone talked about this before or drawn these conclusions or no?
I think we're the first, because I don't know how many Sandland podcasts there are. So we can say we're the first to talk about Sandland's. Sandland, along with Starship Troopers, is a pre-Iraq commentary on Iraq, I guess.
Yeah.
It wasn't intended. The fact that they say weapons of mass destruction, fuck, I should have reread the manga to double check if they say that too. Maybe
and the fact it was a false flag.
Yeah. Hey, man.
Angle, yep.
And again, this was written in 2000. I mean, Toriyama was on some shit.
Toriyama predicted 9/11.
Predicted 9/11. Yeah, man. Well, about a year and a half before it happened. And I mean, I'm sure he was developing this idea even earlier. Is Pearl Harbor considered by some to be a false flag? Maybe he's commenting on that. I know there's some people who think that. I think that's an early conspiracy too. I don't know any of Toriyama's.
Yeah, I haven't gone deep into the Pearl Harbor conspiracy theory stuff, but there are some people that believe that, yeah.
So who knows? And I'm sure let's not get into it too much. There's been plenty of false flag incidents throughout history, and Toriyama is just riffing on that. Yeah, I guess this is...
This is a conspiracy theory podcast now, so...
I'm trying to think, just like, this might be Toriyama's most political work. I'm trying to think of other works he's done. Maybe there's another one-shot or two that I haven't read that have tackled this, but yeah, I guess it's fair to say this is like a fairly political work coming from Toriyama.
They take up arm against the state. Like war crimes or terrorism, military, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Rao claims
also some elements of communism there as well.
Where's the communist stuff come from?
Well, because water is a commodity to be bought and sold, and then they're trying to distribute water for free to everyone.
Oh, gotcha. I thought you were also going to say the state controls the water too. So isn't that another?
Well, yeah, I guess that's my political definitions are loose here. But socialism, it's not even socialism though. Like every state controls water.
Yeah, fair enough. Either way, Rao, he's like claiming, yeah, the PG people were trying to create a weapon of mass destruction, but Thief says they were in fact making a device to create water. And Rao is stunned by this revelation. And it turns out the king was the one who gave the PG people a volatile substance known as aquanium under the guise of cooperation, but the king's army then detonated the aquanium, which destroyed the PG people, and Rao was the commander of this army. And in fact, the blast even killed his own wife, which is pretty fucked up. Yeah, man, it didn't just kill
the name Aquanium. I didn't like the name Aquanium. I thought it was stupid.
It kept auto correcting to Aquarium in my notes, which
yeah.
Toriyama was not thinking about autocorrect back when he wrote this.
Also, the whole thing revolves around water, and it's just way too close to Aquarium.
Yeah, maybe that's what they were thinking. Either way. Listen, Toriyama, there's literally a character called General Bread later on. So this is just Toriyama and is the way he likes to name things. And we're talking about the peachy people who aren't peach colored. That also kind of surprised me. They're blue. They're not like pink or orange. So we notice a lucky charm that Rao has on the tank, and it's a poster of a sexy actress known by Sexy Terrier. We then meet a Jack Dude and his two skinny sons, and they also have a very large son as well, and they're just called the Swimmers. And they're wearing
they're insane. That's unhinged behavior.
I love them. Again, it's Mad Max shit. Like, you just have weirdos in this Mad Max world.
They've never swam before, and they call themselves the Swimmers, and wear speedos and goggles and swim caps.
You know, they're fans of swimming, like it's part of a fandom. And of course, you know, maybe it's foreshadowing the world we'll get soon after. But sure. Yeah, I'm sure they're very happy after, you know, the ending of episode 6, of course. But yeah, they're like bounty hunters. And we see a news report which identifies Rao as General Shiva. Turns out Sexy Terrier was Rao's wife. And yep, she died in the Aquanium blast. And Rao confirms his identity on the communicator to spread the truth about his quest to, you know, reveal the truth that the government is covering up. And then four tanks converge on our heroes, and Rao gets them to sit on a hill where the sun gives off a massive glare, preventing the enemy tanks from getting an accurate shot, which they then use to take out two of the tanks with just one shell. We head straight into episode 4. Again, Toriyama, a man who famously does not plan out his story as well, just is like, oh yeah, demons have telepathy. He's just dropping that.
They just threw that one in there later. Yeah, just
throwing that one in there later. I'm like, fuck, man. Toriyama.
It makes you wonder, like the Rubik's Cube guy, like what other powers he had that you need to show.
I know, man. The Rubik's Cube guy. Maybe that's how he solved the Rubik's Cube. He just uses telepathy to get a read on someone else who solved it. I don't know. Toriyama, a person. I don't know. That made no sense. Toriyama, a person who just famously is like, hey, Goku's defeated Piccolo. And the next issue is like, hey, it's 5 years later. Goku's an alien. He has a son. Yeah. Zero foreshadowing at all. What is it? So yeah, Beelzebub, he said he knew Rao was a good guy because of the telepathy. And using this telepathy, Beelzebub is able to scout out the surrounding area and assist with taking out the remaining tanks. And they take out the
Sorry to interrupt you, but they didn't really go into that at all. I wonder if that comes in like later in the series, how Rao has like more special abilities than like the average human.
No, he's just, you know, just really good at his job. What do you mean special abilities? Like,
well, he made some comment along the lines like that's why they agreed to help him with the mission, because he had like more human brain wavelength than average person. That's how he's able to like use the telepathy to contact him or talk to him.
Oh, I just read that as him being pure of heart or something, but maybe you did hear something.
I just
was like, oh, he's pure of heart because all the other humans in this series suck.
Or yeah, but he's also like a really accomplished military guy, like more than the average human. Like he's like good at like operating the tank and combat and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
he's got like some abilities.
He's got some ability. I mean, he's the lead character. There's the whole people online like to complain about why is the lead character so overpowered or something. And it's like, because he's the lead character. He's supposed to be special and good at his job. That's why he's the lead. That's just how it is. I didn't think too hard about that. Anyways, they take out the final tank by ramming into its blind spot, and they give the tank an ultimatum. And the General Array surrenders and he offers to speak with Rao. And Array wants to know the truth behind what happened 30 years ago, because his father also fought alongside Rao and lost his life in the blast. And Rao claims to stand by his friends Beelzebub and Thief, as they're the most honest people he's ever met. Which again, you know, he's siding with demons over humankind, because that's the irony. Mm-hmm. The fact that the demons may in fact be more pure of heart than the humans. And then the swimmers, they try to take out everyone, but Beelzebub saves them. Thief tells Array the truth about the Peachy incident, while Beelzebub takes out the swimmers. And Array struggles to believe the truth, but nevertheless, he lets Rao go, and he blames the attack on the swimmers. And then meanwhile, Beelzebub has already found the spring. I actually thought that happened way quicker than I expected. I almost thought it was going to be like a bluff or something. I was like, oh shit, they've already found
the spring. Yeah.
Because it's only
it did seem earlier.
Yeah, but it turns out there's more plot, which fair enough. Episode 5, the Peachy, they are at the spring. General Array asks General Zhu about the truth, and Zhu is an asshole who just wants Array to follow him blindly. And then Zhu tells his men to arrest Array anyways. And Beelzebub tells Rao he told the Peachy they were never going to tell anyone where they were to begin with. And Rao is shocked by how pure Beelzebub's heart is. And Beelzebub even lets Rao just call him Beels. But that's a hard name to pronounce, so I'm not going to say it. I'm just going to go back to calling him Beelzebub.
Beels. Yeah, the show could have just ended right there. Like, oh, we found a spring of water. That was our original intention. But they're like, nope, we got to find another one now.
Nope, now we got to find another one. It turns out there's a far bigger spring, to be fair.
True.
General Array, he does betray the king, and he gives away the location of the king's water source. This is dope, because I thought General Array was going to be like a mini boss effectively in this narrative, but nope, he gets converted to the side of good, so I dug that. He's a good guy, that General Array. They get to the source, and it's not just a river, but an entire dam. And a tank comes out of the ground, and it's massive and powered by aquanium. And the tank drops an entire army of insect men that Beelzebub has to fight. I thought it was
basically Cybermen.
Yeah, they're definitely Cybermen. They're just Cybermen, but bigger. I thought there was going to be more of a fight with the tank itself, but instead the tank just kind of drops the insect men onto them.
I didn't think the insect men were that cool either.
They're pretty mediocre. And Beelzebub, yeah. he takes them down. They do manage to exhaust Beelzebub, to be fair. But the prince, he's like a saint and he's holding back. He eventually unleashes his fury and defeats.
Oh. That annoyed me.
Why? Was it too Dragon Ball for you?
Well, it was kind of Dragon Ball-ish. And like the fact that like he got the absolute shit kicked out of him first before he tried. And then it was just like, oh, I'm trying now. Like he got stabbed. He was on the ground getting just gang stomped by 10 guys. And like, and then he's like, okay, now I'm going to unleash my power. Also, I thought we were going to get like a Super Saiyan transformation there. They were like, oh, you haven't seen his true power yet. He's going to reveal, what was it, like demon energy or demon power or whatnot. And then he started charging up, basically. I thought we were going to get a transformation there. And the fact that like nothing happened kind of annoyed me.
Yeah, we don't actually get a real like Super Saiyan transformation.
I thought that was going to be like a Super Saiyan moment or something.
He's just a bit faster and stronger. That's about it.
He's basically trying now.
And then he does try to convince the insects to stop fighting, but then Zhu activates the self-destruct in them, which again, that was totally Cybermen shit, the fact that they could self-destruct.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if they would have joined Beelzebub, Beels, whatever.
I'm sure, I mean, I guess it sounded like General
Zhu. They were getting convinced. Like,
yeah, he was getting convinced. Yeah. He's like, all right, now I gotta blow them up. Zhu and Rao, they have their big confrontation. Rao manages to disable Zhu's turret, but Zhu is still able to drop bombs. But right before he can drop a bomb onto Rao, General Array takes him down with a cannon shot. Zhu begs Rao for forgiveness, and then Rao merely fires a warning shot near his head and tells him to tell the king the truth about the dam and says, the truth about the dam and the Peachy people will be told. And Zoo, because he's a fucking stinker, he ends up escaping his cyborg shell and he threatens to blow up the entire dam. And Beelzebub, he's now recovered from his wounds. So he just flies into Zoo and he knocks him out into the sky.
And that's the first time we saw him fly, too.
Yeah, I guess. Was he even flying or they jumping?
I guess they made it seem like it was a jump, but yeah, he kind of flew up there.
He kind of flew up. I guess that's him going a bit more Super Saiyan. There we go. That's how Zoo is taken down.
So annoying. Why didn't they shoot Zoo?
Yeah, I mean,
out of all characters, he could have gotten. Like, he deserved to get shot there.
He's a very, very bad person. He's committed war crimes.
Does he die? I mean, they don't, like, that's kind of, like, the end of it, but.
I mean, I wouldn't say he died. It reminded me of, like, Team Rocket from Pokemon. He just gets blasted off into the sky, but I'm sure he's fine.
Yeah.
But we don't see
him. Does he make an appearance later? Well, like, we didn't in the 7 episodes, but does he show up later?
No, because, again, episode 7 onwards is original material, and I've only watched episode 7. I haven't watched 8 yet. I'm not holding my breath to see Zoo back. Maybe he is, but, again, the series is, like, still ongoing. That's the funny thing. The fact that the video game is coming out, it comes out April 10th, so I guess it still means there's going to still be, like, 4 episodes left of the anime. So I guess if you, dear listener, are super keen on seeing the story finish, you should get the game to see how the story is told. Because I'm assuming the game is just going to adapt the entire anime. Or who knows, maybe the game has even more story. I guess there's going to be side quests and shit, too. But a lot of Sandland content. What can I say? We've gone from just a one volume manga to a whole franchise. Anyways, the swimmers come in clutch. The swimmers are there to fully blow up the dam because the tank wasn't enough to do that.
Oh, you mean domestic terrorism and destroying critical infrastructure owned by the government?
They do destroy critical infrastructure owned by the government. But I mean, the government who is holding back a water source for the population.
That's subjective. We don't even know the exchange rate of Zenny to dollar. Like, they sent us 20,000 Zenny for a half liter of water. Maybe that's like 50 cents and it's the citizens that are being unreasonable. Like, we don't, like, you say 20,000 is a big number, but we don't know the exchange rate. What's the average salary in Sandland? Like, do people make like 100 Zenny an hour? Do they make a million Zenny an hour? I have no idea.
I would say the people we see in the society do not look particularly rich, so it seems whatever they're being charged is holding them back.
We're led to believe it's unreasonable, but what is the value of Zenny?
You heard it here, folks. First, folks, Domenico really needs to know the exact exchange rate.
Because then he sells, we skipped over that part, but he sells a picture to the media for 2 million Zenny. Right? So that's the only other, like, comparison we get. Like, we don't know how many Zenny it costs for an apple.
You're not wrong there. Maybe the video game. I suppose the video game, since I would assume you buy things and upgrade things and acquire items, maybe the video game will answer your questions. So I guess
maybe I'll find out and be, like, proven wrong. Like, no, 20,000 Zenny is an insane amount to pay for water. But, like, as it stands, I don't really know.
Fair enough.
Like, all societies have dams so they can manage the water, right? Because they don't want to just completely deplete the resources. And they're like, no, we're going to blow it up.
That's true.
And they're supposed to be the good guys. Just
they may have not...
Tells us.
I guess there's a lot of questions to be answered, too. How is this water going to be distributed from now on? Did it just... how did it flow, too? That has to be managed.
Yeah, there's just full-on anarchy now. This state was effectively managing the water, selling it at market price, and then these crazy terrorists come along, blow up the dam, and then just give the water for free to everyone.
This is why I had you on. I don't think other people would have been able to ask these important questions. There we go, man. So Rao, he appoints Array as the new Supreme Commander of Sandland. Not that, I suppose you're going to point this out, Rao has no authority. Because he is not a member of the state, but I suppose the king is just not going to bother either.
Yeah, he staged a military coup, and they overthrew the government, so I guess he has the authority to appoint whoever he wants as a supreme leader. But also, hilarious that they took an old guy and two demons to, like, I don't know, how long did that take? timeline, a couple days?
A week or two, maybe.
Yeah, maybe a week to overthrow the government. Like, that's pretty easy.
And they did so with no deaths.
Yeah, why? Yeah, they didn't. They staged a military coup, overthrew the military and the government, and then still kept the king or monarch in place as well, which is crazy for a political revolution. Has that ever happened before?
No.
Like, I thought the king would get like brought out into the street and executed, or like guillotined or something,
or at the very least deposed, or you know, maybe
yeah, for sure, deposed. No, also, why didn't if the demons are that powerful, like the military isn't a match for them? Why haven't they taken over Sandland?
Because they just like to fuck around and play video games. The demons
just want to play video games and chill.
They're just, you know, 2,500-year-old children.
Yeah, I guess they're not.
I mean, even Beelzebub is still obeying his father's wishes, despite the fact that he could just go to a village and say, "Hey, Dad, I'm just gonna go check something out at this
village."
You could just play his PlayStation the entire time. I'm sure they got a TV too, so what's stopping him?
Video games is what's preventing demons from taking over the entire country.
Yeah, people got to make the video games. They got to keep, you know, he's only got a PlayStation, so, you know, they still got to release PS2 and onwards in this society. So, yeah, Rao, he appoints Array as the new supreme commander of Sandland. And then we get a little post-credit scene of a girl, a blonde-haired girl. She's wearing blue and she's got, like, a red bandana on her. That's original.
Oh, I missed the post-credits.
It's fine. It's, like, literally, like, 10 seconds long. It's just a little glimpse of this new character, Anna, who's going to be our new co-lead for the new story. So here we go. Episode 7.
Is there post-credit scenes for every episode?
No, just this one.
Okay, yeah, because Disney Plus prompts you like right away.
Yeah, they don't prompt you for this one. That's how I knew it was
Okay. Yeah.
Again, it's minor stuff. It's not like a major scene. And if you miss it again, you're just going to meet this character in the following episode anyways. Anyways, episode 7, the story of Angel Hero, onto a new adventure. So Rao, he's stopping by the demon village and Beelzebub is back to gaming. And we learn the diamond bandits repaired Rao's car. And the gang goes to a local market, and unfortunately bigotry against demons is still a thing. So despite, like, you know, bringing water to everyone, Beelzebub still can't just be a demon in this market. Which is kind of fucked up, man. It's fucked up. He saved the world. And there's an annoying wingless angel with a bob haircut who confronts Beelzebub when he's just trying to gang. He's trying to fucking play his handheld game in the shade. They have a fight and Beelzebub kicks the angel's ass. And the angel tries to fire off a lightning spell, but apparently there's not enough humidity to cast a spell. And he even tells Beelzebub, he's like, "Hey, can you come here closer to where the spell can activate?" But not going to happen. But the angel does manage to one-up Beelzebub by breaking his game system. So that was pretty shitty, especially considering how rare these are.
Yeah, dude, that angel was an asshole.
He's an asshole. His bob haircut is stupid.
It's ironic, too, that he's supposed to be the angel and the demon's the pure-hearted nice guy.
Well, I guess that's the irony of the title. This angel is referred to as the hero. But he's not, you know. Maybe that's the message the series is trying to convey, that, you know, the people.
That's the whole thing, is that the bad guys are the good guys.
Yeah, absolutely. The domestic terrorists are the heroes, and the government is not meant to be trusted. It's consistent with values, obviously.
True, it's true. Yeah.
So at the spring, the Peachy people have made Rao a stun gun called a Pow Pow gun, and Beelzebub just gets a floaty tap dispenser that can make someone float for 10 seconds, and it's pretty fucking pointless.
Considering he can already fly, basically.
Yeah. I'm sure down the road in these new episodes, the floaty tap dispenser will prove critical, but for now, it's just useless. We then see a blonde-haired girl who we briefly saw in the post-credits of episode 6, and she's being attacked by these drones. The gang rescues her, and they notice she has a quanium on her. And they give her a ride, but not to where she wants to go. They give her a ride to the blast site of where the Peachy people were obliterated. And Rao is basically just like, "Hey, listen, this is what Aquanium does. Why do you need this shit?" And she reveals she's going to use the Aquanium to fight the Forest Lands army. So 10 years ago, the Forest Lands suffered a coup led by General Bread. And they're trying to resurrect weapons from the Great War era. And they plan to take over the world using Aquanium and Peachy technology. And this girl's name is Anne, and she's a member of the Resistance. The concept of Forest Land is like the most no-shit possible thing you could do for a sequel. I'm like, oh, of course, you've done Sandland. Well, what's the opposite of Sandland? Forestland.
Maybe it would have been Snowland.
Snowland could have been the opposite.
Forestland probably, yeah, Forestland's more appropriate, I feel like.
Forestland's more appropriate, and also there's just more diversity to that environment, too, as we see at the very end. The crew is going to go on a quest to Forestland, and meanwhile, the angel, whose name is Munio, he meets with Commander Bread and declares that no one will be able to oppose them. And the gang, they step into Forestland, and it's beautiful, you know. There's waterfalls and lush trees, except Beelzebub thinks it's gross. And that's how the episode ends. There we go. We have covered 7 whole episodes of Sandland. Before we get into final thoughts and any other things, let's go to our favorite segment. Cue the music.
Speedwagon! Speedwagon! Speedwagon!
Speedwagon!
Speedwagon! Speedwagon!
Speedwagon!
Speedwagon!
Speedwagon!
Speedwagon!
Speedwagon!
Speedwagon!
Allow me to elucidate ya. The name is Robert E.O. Speedwagon.
So for those just joining in, the Speedwagon is our favorite supporting character from this batch of episodes. I'll go first. I think Domenico probably knows who I'm going to pick. I'm going to pick the Rubik's Cube Demon. I fucking loved him.
Good choice.
He's dope. He's the perfect Speedwagon. He's there for one joke, and it's an awesome joke. I love it. I wish, you know, maybe he'll still pay off. Maybe in these original episodes, they'll give him something to do at the very end, and I'll just be holding out hope that he gets to use his Rubik's Cube technique to solve a major problem.
Nice. Right? It's a good Speedwagon. I like
it. Yeah. Who's your Speedwagon?
I'm going to go with the peachy guy that gives the gun, the pew-pew gun, and the floating tablet thing. I don't think we got a name for him, did we?
No, he's the peachy representative, you know, maybe the peachy technology expert.
Yeah, I like the peachy people. They seem pretty cool. I think they got referenced before we saw them, and I did not expect them to look like that. I thought they'd be, like, similar-ish to humans. Also, I think the first time we saw them, they didn't even talk. So I didn't even know they could talk until episode 7.
Yeah, I think this is a new concept, too.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm going to go with the peachy representative.
Fantastic. There we go, man. Final thoughts, I'll go. I think for now, the show is like an 8 out of 10. There's nothing inherently wrong with this adaptation. I think it's fun. It's animated well. I guess my issue is, you know, maybe the story could just go further. Obviously, clearly Toriyama and Sunrise felt there was more story to tell, which is why we're going to get, you know, 6 more episodes of this. And I'll continue to watch it because, again, I love Toriyama. I think the best part about this show is the character designs. The fact that we're just getting more Toriyama work is fantastic. And, you know, I want to see his creativity bloom. It's a solid adaptation. Is this going to go down among my, you know, top 10 anime or even my top 50? Good question. Unlikely. But, you know, it's a fun, breezy show. The fact that it's only going to be 13 episodes total, I think that's nice. I certainly prefer the shorter animes. As much as I love the big epic ones like One Piece, I also don't mind something that's, you know, one and done. So the fact that we, you know, got a proper adaptation of Toriyama's work and we're even getting a little bit more extra, you know, that's good enough for me. What about you, Domenico? How did you feel about this? You haven't... Oh, no, I was going to say the last thing you watched with us was that weird fucking movie. Its name escapes me, but I know this was at least a while.
Oh, I totally forgot about it. I hated that one too, didn't I?
Yeah, you hated that one.
I should say I hated it. Yeah, that one I actually hated. This one, like, obviously, it'd be kind of tongue in cheek when I'm like saying the main characters are like domestic terrorists and like they're the bad guys and they're like like communist anarchists. But this show doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Animation wise, it's great. The characters are fun. There's some interesting characters there. It's a fun story. Maybe like a 6 out of 10, but like just. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, we don't really know much about, like, the origin of Sandland. I don't really get what's going on there. It seemed, like, pretty simple for them to just overthrow the government, and they still kept the king in place. That was silly. Why aren't the demons taking over? I know I'm being way too literal, but I have some problems with the story itself.
And I don't think you're going to get answers to that. I think that the story is just going to move on to our heroes taking on the Forest Land army.
Yeah, they've already committed terrorism in their own country. Now they're expanding to the neighboring country. They're going to try to overthrow the government there.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's going to happen. You know, I would like to think the action set pieces are going to be even more impressive. Obviously, we talked about how Beelzebub didn't get to go Super Saiyan, but maybe because they have more story to tell, we can see him take another step. But at the same time,
we'll probably have a fight scene with the Angel. I'm assuming they're going to build up to that. Because there wasn't,
yeah, for sure.
There wasn't any like Dragon Ball style fight scenes. Like, well, there was a lot of tank fighting, and then he beat up the Insect Man, I guess. But there wasn't like hand to hand combat, really. If that makes sense.
And I mean, to be fair, if you wanted that from Toriyama, Dragon Ball Super Superhero,
you've already got, yeah, you've got enough episodes of Dragon Ball to watch. There doesn't need to be a Sandland as well.
And it should be noted, like, we are getting a new Dragon Ball series this fall, Dragon Ball Daima, true, which Toriyama apparently had more involvement in than he did with Dragon Ball Super, even. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so, you know, we're probably going to inevitably have to cover a brand new Dragon Ball series at some point. I don't know if you've seen the trailer to that. It controversially is going back to the kid format with Goku and the gang being turned into children. In Dragon Ball GT, it was just Goku turned into a kid. Now it's the whole cast. I know people were more negative towards that. Now that Toriyama has passed, I think they're going to give it more credit because it is the last Dragon Ball thing he had involvement in. So that's good.
Yeah, some people don't want to be negative. Are there people shitting on Sandland? Or
I don't think there's a ton of opinions on Sandland. I saw IGN reviewed it and gave it a 9, so they loved it.
Okay.
But I don't think there's going to be a lot of passionate Sandland fans upset about this adaptation. I mean, from what I've read of the manga, it's pretty much word for word accurate, bearing some additional scenes. Yeah, we'll see how Dragon Ball Daima is received. And I mean, to be fair, when people talk about canon, the canon work is just, you know, Dragon Ball the manga. That's the canon work, which is the thing Toriyama had the most involvement in because, you know, he wrote and drew every single page of it. There you go, man. That's Sandland for you. Domenico, you, as always, do not want to be found. You're a private citizen.
That's right. Don't look me up. Don't follow me.
Private citizen Domenico. And you're the one who coined the private citizen moniker, which other guests have also taken on. So you're a true innovator. Nice. You're a true innovator.
All right, I like it.
When it comes to privacy on the Is This Anime podcast. As always, though, you can find me at OnlyRealJackM on Twitter, at JackIsJack on Instagram. If you, dear listener, want to come on the podcast, obviously, as we saw with Arthur Bianchini last week, I'm more than happy to have other people on. It's just fun to, you know, talk about things you like. And I'm not too picky about what we have on, except I just don't like doing repeats too often. But yeah, there we go. Thank you for listening to this podcast. As always, you can find us at Is This Anime Pod on Instagram. We are not active on Twitter anymore. Thank you, Domenico, once again for, you know, consuming 7 episodes of this as you're hungover and still pulling through.
Hungover on a Sunday, yeah. No, it was enjoyable. Well,
hungover on a Sunday is fine. That's normal. Hungover on a Monday, that would be like, oh, fuck.
True. Well, technically tomorrow is Easter Monday, but I am working, so.
Oh, I'm working too, yeah. Anyways, I guess that's how we'll end it off. I hope you, dear listener, you had a great Easter. This is dropping on a Tuesday, so I guess you're just back to work. But there you go. If you love Sandland, buy the game or not. There's a demo and it's quite bad. But there
Are
we
you
go.
Gonna get the game?
Maybe if it's on sale, I'm not going to buy it day one.
Ah, fair enough.
Yeah.
How much is it?
Fuck, man. Canadian video game prices for a full blown video game, you know, that's like $93. Not a lot.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Oh my god, man. And I mean, I'll spend that money on certain games, but Sandland is not worthy enough for that.
Fair enough.
Yeah. There you go, listener. I hope you had a great Easter, and you know, we'll continue to enjoy Toriyama's works as there's still a couple left over. Take it easy.